The Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyor of fine games, and Bezier Games, the new classics. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up. Seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to yet another show.
I'm Will Meadows.
I'm Sarah.
Kevin Delp.
Melissa Delp.
Katie Pills.
And Ryan Pills.
We're in the house.
Well, that was weird.
You said it weird.
Come on, Will.
You're throwing us off.
21 times in a row.
You threw me off. Exactly. I didn't even say my last name. I got confused.
She did. I was like,
you threw off the groove.
It's Will and Sarah Meadows over there.
Yeah, yes. Together. Yeah. Happily having the same last name.
Yeah. It's another Monday night.
It is. Yeah. We've been having lots of fun. I feel like this episode, we have a lot of ground to cover. We've got an interview coming up later. We've got how many Kickstarter games coming?
We have eight Kickstarter games that we are talking about that will be hitting Kickstarter the week of Monday, January 15th, 2018.
Yeah, right. So a ton of games to talk about. I'm glad to see the uptick in the content of our show.
Yes.
Interview and sponsor.
This episode is sponsored by B&B Game Studio. Their game, Noises at Night, launches on Kickstarter January 16th.
Woohoo.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. I didn't actually get to play it. You guys were playing a prototype last week, right? Mm-hmm. Tell us a little teeny bit about that one.
Yeah, so Noises at Night is a game for 2 to 4 players, and it's a really quick game. It's like 15 to 20 minutes. I'd say it's a family-friendly card game. What's the basic mechanics, Melissa?
There's some aspects of deduction, because each player has a secret identity, and each one of those identities scores for a certain symbol. And you have a bunch of cards in your hand that have different symbols that you're playing into the house. And each character is also in a certain room in the house, and you score points for having your symbol in the house and for having cards in your room. But you don't want to be too obvious, because if other people guess who you are, they can get a lot of points.
Yeah. Okay, sounds cool.
Yeah.
When it was on the table, I actually thought it kind of looked like Haunt the House.
Yes, by Tableborn Gaming. Mm-hmm.
Is it like that at all, or
well,
not?
Sarah played it, so tell us, Sarah.
The only one who's played both. It is similar in the fact that it is a haunted house type feel, but I would say the mechanics are pretty different.
Okay.
So, two different games, a similar theme to it, but they do play differently.
The mechanics are definitely different.
Yeah.
Cool.
Interesting. We've also played all kinds of other cool stuff recently.
Yes.
We played the Unlock game. What was that one? What's that one called?
We did a 6-player The Island of Dr. Gorse.
Okay.
Which it was pretty difficult.
It was a little tough.
I can't give you any spoilers because you might play in the future, but we were trapped on an island after our plane went down.
Yeah.
So
we
had to escape the island.
You kind of had to work together, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, in cool ways.
Yeah. I may have gotten a little frustrated at Kevin.
There may have been a few times where, like, come on, guys.
Without giving you all
just
the information.
Just give us something.
I gave you all the information you needed.
Almost. Yep. Almost. You guys have played a bunch of different Unlock ones on the scale of, like, difficulty.
It wasn't as difficult as some of them.
Okay.
We've played a couple difficult. I actually say the Unlock series is a little bit more not as hard as the Exit series, which is from Cosmos. Yes. Unlock's from Space Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
Cosmos is from
Exit.
Sorry, Exit's from Cosmos. And I would say those are much more difficult, but you can't play as many players with Exit, is what I think.
Yeah, having 6 was a lot of fun, especially with the thing that you do.
Yeah.
Spoilers!
Even most of the other Unlocks besides that one, I would say maybe 4-ish.
Yeah. You could play more.
4 or 5
yeah.
would be a good number.
How did you feel on the mechanics of it? Like,
they're very similar in mechanics, but the gameplay itself, the puzzles are so different compared to from game to game.
I felt like this had some pretty unique. I mean, just from the escape rooms I've done and other things, the thing that we shall not talk about was interesting. I don't think I've seen that in other.
There were a couple things where I played in an actual escape room, like an escape game in a real like escape room, escape. And some of those puzzles, there was one or two that I remember actually happening in the Unlock series. Thinking, oh, I actually remember like
this
thing in real life. I wonder if this would happen in the game, and it did.
Oh. In just the one we just played?
No, in a different unlocking. I was like, that's pretty cool.
He's got the insights.
Real world experience.
Well, there was a few times we got stuck on things that should have been, I'm not going to say, they weren't even puzzles. They were just common sense things. Yes. And we just got stuck on them. And we're like, we felt like we did every single thing
and except that one thing.
Yeah, right. And then it was like, oh, duh.
This is so obvious. We are idiots.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say before we move into our more Kickstarter stuff is the game that we play Thursday nights.
Yeah. Yes. Talk about a little Charterstone. Ooh, that was not bad harmony. this Meadows last name thing might work out.
So we're playing six. We're playing six player Charterstone. I actually highly recommend playing six player Charterstone. I'm trying to think of like if there's only four players. I know there's ways that the game progresses with just the four or less than six players, but I'm thinking I actually like it with six players.
Yeah. I'd be curious to know what, you know, if people are playing it with four, how different is their
experience? Honestly, we didn't even read the rules if you wanted to progress the four player game.
I think the other charters do progress in certain ways, but of course it's like automated in some way. Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I thought it was really... I didn't really know what to expect. Worker placement, legacy game.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting.
I was going to say, I was totally thrown off from just, like, we played two rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, playing the first round and then getting instructions for the second round, Ryan and I were both really thrown off on... We thought the game had completely changed, and so we went in this one direction, and
that's right.
And then that was not true. It's not what happened, and it showed in the fact that our scores were really low.
I thought Ryan actually won, or did Will
win? I won the first one, and bombed the second one.
Yeah.
So as a group, we need to do better at making sure everyone understands what has changed.
Right. I mean,
kind of.
I like winning, so.
There is a slight catch-up mechanic, or at least some sort of consolation prize for the losers.
And
so I did appreciate that.
We did get to name Ryan's charter because he won, so...
Yeah.
We were nice to him. We didn't do Ryan McBody face or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I voted for that one, but. Ryan McBody. Too good.
So, there, as I say, it actually is pretty cool because there's like little workers that you get and characters. Like, you start off as a character and you do get to name all of those characters you like write on the cards and then they recirculate from round to round, and that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. I feel like there's some room for a little bit of role play in there, kind of, as you
definitely as you name stuff.
Yeah.
Your workers that like stay with you and then the ones that leave, and I feel so betrayed. I'm just like, no, Mary, don't go.
Kevin's naming all of his stuff after Hogwarts, Harry Potter.
Harry Potter references. So my charter is Hogsmeade. So having fun with that. But one more thing.
Okay.
Spirits of the Forest.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Hot Kickstarter.
Pretty
hot Kickstarter right now. Katie really likes it.
I do really
got a preview copy, and Kevin has made a video.
Yes, you can check that out on our YouTube channel, which is Tantrum House YouTube channel. if you're listening to this,
are we supposed to echo that somehow?
No, I just want to make sure people know where to go on YouTube. Look up Tantrum House.
Do that. That's a good plan.
But Spirits of the Forest is a fun, it's an abstract game. I mean, but it's got a cool theme with the spirits, and you're trying to collect majorities of certain spirits and of the nature symbols and spirit symbols, so.
It looked cool. I started to, like, hear the instructions, got pulled away, came back, my seat was taken.
Yep.
And everyone was playing in, like, 2 minutes. So that is the nice thing. It's kind of an abstract strategy, right?
Yeah.
So once you understand the basics, you can jump in. There's not, like, 300 rules.
Yeah, not a ton of rules to it, so. Quick, and it's a pretty quick play.
Yeah.
Too.
But very nice, like sharp looking artwork.
Yeah, and they've unlocked a lot of stretch goals, and I think the tiles are wooden tiles now.
Oh,
nice. Wow.
Check out the Kickstarter.
I know that there's wooden tokens in the deluxe version.
I'm going to look it up while you guys keep talking.
All right.
Well, I think we're actually ready to roll into our house guest segment. So let's go ahead and welcome Chris Leader into the house. Hello!
Hi!
Guys,
we are great.
We're doing real good. Chris, how are you? We are excited to have you on the show.
Oh, I'm excited to be here.
Excellent. We've been having a good little pre-conversation, but let's go ahead and jump into the real interview because we want to get into that meat as quick as we can.
Oh, absolutely.
We've got a Kickstarter game to talk about, but before we get there, I'm a little bit curious about some of the other experiences you've had. You're the designer behind the game Roll For It, correct?
That is correct, yeah.
That may have gotten you onto a TV show with Will Wheaton. Tell us a little bit about that experience, because I'm curious to know what that all is like behind the scenes.
Oh, so Roll For It. So I designed games since I was in, college, and it was always heavier stuff that my buddies would get into. And so Roll For It was my attempt to get something that my wife would sit down and play with me, you know, because she doesn't play a lot of games, so she doesn't want to play something that's going to take forever. So I made Roll For It, and I pitched it to Calliope, and it took off, and I was thrilled, you know. And everyone kept saying to me, you know, this is not normal how quickly this game is spreading. And I was
spreading,
like,
oh, yeah,
because, you know, it was the first time I tried. So then it got onto tabletop, and it blew me away. So my first ever convention was actually Toy Fair in New York. I was taken along with my boss, Ray, to New York to be at Toy Fair. And we met with somebody who was with tabletop that year. And he said, yeah, you know, I'll have to show this to Will. I think Will would really like this. And I was like, wait, Will Wheaton? Like, what? So, the process of those things, it takes a while. So it took about 2 more years before it actually happened.
But, oh, wow. Okay.
You know, it's just kind of amazing when those things are lurking in the background and then they happen. You know, and then seeing people play Roll For It. And the funny thing about it was everyone would joke with me and say, you know, you think that they'll screw up any of the rules? Because tabletop, you know, let's face it, they have a little bit of a, you know, They kind of screw things up.
History, yeah.
So Roll For It literally has 3 rules. You know, you roll it, you match it, you score it. And it's like, well, they can't screw that up. Well, yeah, they screwed it up. Because there's one rule about pulling dice back from cards. If you pull any dice back, you just have to pull all of your dice. And here's Will, like, pulling half the dice back and leaving some out there. And I'm going, you screwed up the rules.
But it's 3 rules.
It's okay. They had a good time playing it, and I was really excited because Jason Ritter was one of the people who played on that episode.
Cool.
And,
yeah,
you know, I think he's a great actor, and so I actually, you know, sent him a tweet, and he sent one back, and I was like, oh, awesome. My gosh, this is awesome. You know, so it's like a little brush with fame.
We have arrived. Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's super cool. So you've got a history with Calliope. How many games have you published?
I've only published the one, Roll For It.
Okay,
I have a game called City of Gears, which is coming out with Gray Fox Games this year. The guys who do Champions of Midgard. And then I have one other game that's being published, which I'm not sure if I'm allowed to talk about, but if all goes well, it'll be out at Gen Con as well. So I will go from having one published game to having 3, hopefully by this summer. So I'm very excited about that.
All right, so then next up on the horizon, obviously, is the Mansky Caper, and that's what we're here talking about tonight.
Absolutely.
Give us the lowdown on that and all the good details that are going in there, and then we got a couple questions we'll toss at you. But
so I'm going to warn you guys. I'm going to talk about Mansky Caper. I have to slip into character.
Ooh.
So just hold on a moment here.
Excellent.
Here we go. All right. So the Mansky Caper, listen, the big boss Al Mansky, he thinks he's all that in a bucket of chips. He's going out of town. We're going to hit his place. We're going to go to his mansion. Now everybody knows Al doesn't trust banks. He doesn't trust guards. So what he does is he puts all his money in safes scattered all around his house. So we're going to go through his house. We're going to rob each and every one of those safes, but you got to be careful because they're booby-trapped. So as you reach into a safe, you might pull a danger, danger, and there might be an explosion. So, yes, Mansky Caper is a game set in the Prohibition era, and there's a mansion, Big Al Mansky's mansion, and you play as a group of wise guys who are going through this mansion, and you are pressing your luck, basically, reaching into these 3D safes to pull out tokens, and they might show loot, so you get gems, which are little plastic gems that are shiny in the game, and little coins, or you might pull out gasps. If it's a gasp, it's some sort of a plot twist, so it might be that you found a hidden lever and you open up another room of the mansion, or it might be danger, danger, which means you've tripped one of those booby traps, and you get it one chance to roll this 12-sided danger, danger die to see if you've disarmed the trap or if it blows up something in the room. It could be you, it could be everyone, it could be the loot, you just never know. So it's a fantastic press your luck game. It's one of those games where you sit around with people and you play, and every time someone picks up one of those little safes and they reach in, everyone sort of leans in.
On the edge of the chair, wait.
Because the cool thing is when you're in a room with other players, whatever you pull, if you pull 6 gems and there's 6 people in the room, everyone gets 1 gem. You have to split everything that you get. But if there's only 2, you're only getting, you know, you're going to get 3.
Ah.
So sometimes it's good to be in the room with other people. Let them kind of take some of the, you know, risk. But it's also nice to be by yourself because you're going to get the most
the
loot.
Reward. Yeah, cool.
And then you take the stuff out and it goes on top of your stash bag. you have to actually take a turn to go back out to the getaway car and put it into your stash bag when you want to do that. But once you get yourself out of the house, you don't have to, you know, people don't have to split anything with you. So it's a little bit of a choice. When do I want to keep robbing the house? When do I take a moment to get out? So, and the other part of the game that's really, really fun is there's these things called favor markers. So everyone owes each other, right? Hey, we've been going a long time together, right? I owe you, you owe me. So you have these little favor markers. Everyone has a special power. Just like in most games, every character has their own special ability. But you can't use it for yourself. Someone has to pay you a favor to use your ability for themselves. So okay, it might be cool. might be like, I'm worried I'm going to pull a danger out of the safe. I'm going to pay you a favor so I can draw two and choose which one I'm going to do. So you can hoard those favor markers. You can give them away to people. And so you find yourself doing these great little, you know, fun personality things as you play the game. So there's a lot of interaction in the game, a lot of press your luck, and it's just a blast.
Cool. The safes look really slick. All the components look really nice. How the rooms for the mansion, mm-hmm. are those different every time? How much of this is random?
Yes.
Like the setup for it is different?
Definitely a variable setup. So there are 10 room cards that come in the box, but you only ever use 5 of them each game. So you're going to shuffle those up and you're going to have a different mansion each time. The characters, there's 8 of those. Characters, but there's only, you know, it's a 2-6 player game, so there's always going to be characters that don't get used, and the way they interact with each other changes. So there's always variable setup. The gasp cards that you draw, when you pull one of those gasps, you draw a card, and there's a big deck of like 30 of those. You're probably not going to go through all those in a game, so every session is going to be something a little bit different, and that goes to the all the way down to like the final score. Sometimes the final score is like 106 to 105, and sometimes it's like 14-7 or something like that, because you just the way the rooms explode and where things come up and everything, you just never know what the scores are going to be at the end. So it makes for a lot of different types of experiences when you play.
That's cool. That's real cool. Does it seem to be any different versus like on the player count? Like is a bigger player count better? Is a smaller one better? Does it work out pretty good either way?
So I should say the designer of this game, his name is Ken Franklin. He is one of the best human beings on the face of the earth. And he's been working on this game a long time. It was actually an Apple IIG shareware game is where he kind of came up with the idea for this decades ago. And it's been percolating in his mind. And so it used to be like a pirate push-your-luck game, and then it kind of evolved and changed. But when we came to him and we said, the two-player game's okay. You know, 3-6 players is amazing, but the two-player game's okay. He got to work on it and came up with this great idea of having this driver who basically follows the two players around the mansion, kind of like a, hey, what's going on in here? You know, kind of a thing. And the driver basically steals, like, is there to get stuff from people when they draw from the safe. And it's not just like some dumb AI. It can freaking win the game if you're not careful with this thing. Yeah, the stupid driver is following you around. You're like, get out of here, you know. So it made the two-player game a lot of fun. So I have a 6, almost 7-year-old son, and he's been playing this game now for like a year. And we play it 2 players with the driver. And he absolutely loves it. And he knows how to use those special abilities and stuff to like stick it to me at like just the right time. it's great. 2-6 players all the way. All the player counts are a lot of fun. It's a great time.
I noticed in some of the advertising, it says that when you open the box for the first time, everything is ready to play. Is everything pre-punched, pre-assembled, ready to go?
Yes. So this is the thing about the Kickstarter, is that we aren't going for the kind of incremental stages of stretch goals. You know, we're getting away from that. We've done that in the past, but this time we worked with the factory to push this thing as far as it could go. Calliope Games, we try to keep all of our games under $40. And so we said, with that as the high level, how much can we get into this thing and how can we make this a full experience? So most of our games, you'll be able to open the box and you'll be able to play with whatever's in there right out of the box. So like we have sharpened pencils on any, you know, games that use pencils and things like that. This one, the 3D safes are pre-folded and ready to go. The coins are all pre-punched. There's actually a storage box that comes in the middle of the thing. When you open it, everything is pre-divided, like the gems and the coins and everything. So you're getting the full experience the minute you open the box. And that's, for us, we would rather someone spend that extra 20 minutes playing the game versus punching and throwing away big, you know, empty things of cardboard. So, absolutely. Everything is ready to go when you open the box.
Awesome. Cool. What day is it launching?
It launches on Thursday, January 11th, 2018.
Okay, cool. So by the time this goes live, you'll already be on Kickstarter. You'll already be successfully funded. No. What tell us about some of the stretch goals and like the levels? What do we get? What can our backers expect?
Well, okay, so going back to what I said before, so stretch goals is a little bit different. We're saying like this is the game. You know, we started this process by saying, okay, we've got cardboard gems, we've got, you know, we had six characters and things like that, and we were like, we don't want to do the whole, you're getting this move.
Unlock.
We're not unlocking this stuff. We said, we don't want to put this game out unless it's at this level. And as much as we believe in the game, we want it to like do $1 billion on Kickstarter. We just don't want to hit a place where we miss a stretch goal and we have to do the thing where we're like, oh, we're gifting it to you guys. Mm. You know, no. We're saying, look, this is the game. It is plastic gems that are shiny. It is, you know, cloth bags. It is pre-punched stuff. It is the full 3D safes. It's all the characters, everything. I had the game here earlier, like the very first factory one that they produced, just to see if everything would fit in the box. And it is this heavy box that when you open, everything has its place, and it's like everything is perfectly stocked in there. I mean, we were worried because if the coins were any bigger than they were, they wouldn't fit into the storage box. So we've literally taken up every square inch of the box we can, and we've updated everything and upgraded everything to a place where we can still keep it at retail. It'll be $40. But the pledge on Kickstarter is only $32, and it includes shipping for the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're doing everything we can to make it like a super premium thing right at the beginning of the Kickstarter. We don't want anyone to have to check in from time to time. You know, they could shoot us in the foot if people are like, you know, well, I don't know, they're going to be able to maintain this thing. But we're like, look, we're putting our best foot forward. This is the game. Hopefully people are like, wow, $32 for all this? Yeah, this is awesome.
That sounds awesome. That has me excited just to hear that number, because I have seen the components. They look really sharp. The photos that you guys have on BoardGameGeek and other places. Tell people where they can find all your great stuff.
So we are found in, you know, local game stores, which we always support. You can always go to calliopegames.com and you can get some, get an idea of all of our games and things like that. And the whole brand image of Calliope herself flying across the sky in her chariot. It's kind of a cool thing. There's a whole story behind. We're on Twitter at Calliope Games. You know, we're on Facebook. By the time this is on, we'll have launched and everything. So we'll be happy to, you know, talk to everybody and answer any questions and have fun with people online.
Right on the Kickstarter. Excellent. Well, super cool. Good luck to you. This looks exciting. We will definitely try to get our hands on a copy at some point because we'd love to play it and maybe get a review out there for you guys or something. But
absolutely.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thanks so much for being on the show with us, Chris.
Thank you.
Wish you the best of luck, and we'll follow up with your campaign and see how you guys are doing later on.
Perfect. Sounds great. Thank you guys so much for having me.
All right. See you later.
Thanks for being here.
Bye. Well, that was super fun having Chris on the show. I think the Mansky Caper is going to be a lot of fun. I think the idea of having the full-fledged giant package, everything you get it straight up from the beginning with your pledge,
is
pretty brilliant. So.
All ready to go as soon as you get the box. So cool.
Should be slick. Well, let's go ahead and roll into our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter conniption.
All right, Katie, so let's start with some hate.
All right, yeah. So I'm just going to mention real fast hate. That's coming to
Kickstarter. Hate what?
Yes.
She hates Kickstarter.
No, that's not true. Hate by Simon is coming out January 16th. This is a Kickstarter exclusive. They have no plans to produce this or sell it outside of
Simon.
Out of Kickstarter. Yeah,
there's no distribution.
No distribution. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
but retailers are allowed to back the game and buy them and resell them.
Yes.
I wonder if they'll make it onto the Game Steward. Is that like a secret third? Ooh.
Yeah, they could probably go
through
the Game Steward. Yeah, check out GameSteward.com. Maybe they'll work with them.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But I actually got to see Hate. Sarah and I both worked at the CMON Gen Con booth. And we got to see some of the minifigs that they have for that. And people were constantly coming by saying, tell us about Hate. Tell us. And we're like, I'm sorry, they haven't told us anything. You know, but people were already super excited about it, even this past summer. The only things that I do know about it is it is post-apocalyptic. You're each controlling a clan, and you are fighting each other tooth and nail for supplies. You're stirring up hate, and you are trying to just destroy each other. So it sounds like it's going to be very backstab, take that kind of game. So, yeah.
Yeah. Do we know, is it by Eric Lang?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
Adrian Smith is the one that did the comics behind it, so...
But Eric Lang designed the game.
We can check that out, too, since I'm checking out Spirits of the Forest.
Kevin's researching everything on the side. All right, Ryan, what have you got?
Warriors of Jogu is coming January 16th. It is by Monsoon Publishing. It's a two-player competitive card game, and you take on the role of one of these factions. They're really interesting, just unique factions that you have. And... let me pull in a little closer. yeah, so you fight it out. There are five different fields of battle. Cards numbered 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And you will place your faction cards at the different fields. And wherever you place them, if that field of battle actually fights, then... the number that's on that card, 2 through 6, is multiplied by all of your units that are there, and whoever has the most wins
that battle.
That battle,
yeah, it's pretty cool. And each card has this, like, almost like it's special. They have special powers, so like some cards will let you like make other players do things, or let you move cards around, or like destroy cards. And
Katie, did you play with the ones with the cards you could play face down, yeah, so you didn't know?
I did. I played with a faction that had some face down things, and that really... I played against Kevin on that one. And
I had the Gang of Mibbits.
Yes.
And they were pretty powerful.
They were.
But the cool thing about yours is that when you play them face down...
Can't
see what they are. And they're automatically a value of 3 on the face down. But when you turn them over, they could be, 0 through 4 or higher? I don't remember.
Yeah, maybe there was 1-5.
Okay, there's like junior agents and senior agents. So there were secret agents.
Yeah, it was a faction of secret agents.
What do you guys think about the artwork?
Oh, I thought the artwork was really cool.
Yeah.
There was a lot of interesting and just very imaginative stuff with the different clans.
And we said this is only a 2-player game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just 2 players. I didn't mention this, but each player is going to draw a card, and they know where one of the battles is going to occur.
So they know where one is, but not where their opponent is.
So they want to win that battle, but not necessarily lose wherever else is going on.
The other battle is. Yeah, so this company, cool. Monsoon Publishing, produced a game called Iberian Rails last year, and it was a pretty good Kickstarter, and I think it's already out to backers already. So this is their next Kickstarter. Is it over to Will?
It is. Let's talk about Warpgate coming out January 16th. I think we've got a review of this on our channel as well. It's a, 2 to 4 or 1 to 4 player space-themed game where you're trying to... there's a little bit of area control to it, and that's how you're going to score points in the end, but it's also like very secret goal-driven. So in the game, I don't know, there's just lots of cool stuff going on. You need to check out the review because it's a really fascinating set of mechanics. You've kind of got a little bit of programming, kind of, where on your turn you're playing one card at a time out of your hand, and then when you play it, depending on which turn you play it on, you get to take that action that number of times. So if you're on your 4th turn and you play the card, you might get to move 4 spaces or whatever. So that's one whole set of mechanics for the game. You're sending your fleet out to explore ships, and you're sending scientists out, and you're researching things, and as you unlock them, your fleet's ability might get better, which is cool. And then as you discover planets and you colonize them, I don't know what the word is, but you take control of them, then is when you actually get your goal cards. So you might be 20 minutes into the game before you actually know what your end victory point conditions are. Ooh. And then once you have those conditions, then you're trying to vie for actual control of those planets and those sectors so that at the end of the game, you can collect those victory points. So there's battles as you're fighting against each other, and there's a deck of cards that you do your battles with. And then I think there's a limited number of rounds in the game, and then when you get to that last round, or no, I think it's the decks of cards. When either the science deck or this planet deck runs out, then the game ends, and then everybody tallies up their victory points. And it was really surprising the couple of times we played, because you might feel like
And the guy has just control all over the board, and he's going to get a million points. And then at the end, none of the planet cards actually line up with what he's got, and he gets 3 points, and you win with 6 because you had, you know, whatever you got. There's some interesting strategy and some luck involved in the game, but you've got a lot of stuff going on, and it feels really cool as you're moving your spaceships around and everything. I know they've got stretch goals for things like either cardboard tokens or minis and different stuff. So check out that one, January 16th. Kevin, what are you looking at?
Well, a couple updates from our current podcast.
All of our research. That
some
Kevin
research I've
on.
Already done. Number one is Hate Is by Eric M. Lang.
Got it. Boom.
And number two, the Spirits of the Forest update is that the wooden tiles are with the deluxe edition and it's exclusive.
Just so. As I assumed.
Good job.
I've been monitoring this Kickstarter.
So one game I want to talk about that is launching January 16th is Normandy, the Beginning of the End. And this is a two-player game. It plays 1 to 2 hours. And it's by Draco Ideas and Warstorm Series. And it is a dice-rolling, hex-based game, and you are sort of recreating the events of the D-Day. So, sounds pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So, we're going to move on to Melissa.
All right. We already talked about Noises at Night. B&B Game Studio is our sponsor, but I just wanted to give a few more details.
Definitely.
It is for 2 to 4 players, and it plays in about 15 to 20 minutes. I think Kevin probably mentions that... I think it's good for families, for kids. It's not too heavy. It's a light game.
It's a light game, and you need to just know that it's not like... I mean, there's strategy in it, but it's not like deeply strategic because there's some things where it's like the way you're getting points, it's definitely has a light feel to it.
Yeah, it has a little bit of randomness to it.
Sure, which is okay.
The artwork is very cute, mm-hmm. very inviting. There's, you know, the characters. You have a dad, mom, grandpa, but then you also have the cat, the rat, and a cute little boogeyman and a ghost.
It's not scary.
Yeah, not scary at all. I did want to mention that we have 2 videos for this game. We have a preview, Kickstarter preview, that gives a little bit of an overview. And then we also have a playthrough that you can watch, and it's about a 20-minute video, and we play through the whole game.
Yep.
So check those out. I think Katie has another game.
I do. I wanted to talk about Crab Dash.
Crab Dash.
Yeah, and this is another one that we actually got to play and try out. I had a fun time playing it. This is a betting game, and the idea is that there are hermit crabs that are racing. All the hermit crabs have these, like, they're all cute little illustrations. They're kind of grungy and have a lot of personality, but you do some dice rolling, you place bets, you can bet on which crab you think is going to cross the finish line first. And there's an interesting that it's a round board. The crabs all start in the middle, mm-hmm. and then they all move outwards to the outside of the board. So the first one off the board is the winner. Mm-hmm. But they can go off the board in almost any direction. And there's dice movement that tells you where they need to go. So you can also bet on where the first crab will exit the board.
Mm-hmm.
If any crab, you can bet also that any crab will exit on this one space that, you know, so there's a lot of ways to bet on this, and
it sort of reminds us of like Camel Up a little bit.
Yeah, it has sort of the same sort of feel, but there's definitely some unique qualities to it. Mm-hmm. I really love that all the little crabs had very different personalities. I had one little guy named Speedy, and he was still at the very back of the thing, but he came from behind and finished second.
Wow.
So
pretty speedy.
Yeah, he was once he got going.
Yeah, he was a late bloomer.
You know? I cheered for him the whole time.
There's action cards in the game that you can play, and those will influence how the crabs move, and you're trying to get points. You're trying to collect these pearls.
Yeah.
So it is an interesting game.
It is, yep.
And it's by Kohio.
Kohio Games.
Are they from Ohio?
Yes, they are.
Ooh. Are they really?
Yeah. I'm going to need to find those.
Whoa. Kohio from Ohio. All right, Will, what do you have?
Okay, so I got one that I haven't played, but I already want to play it. It's called Loot and Shoot, from Vile Genius Games, from designer Steve Avery.
Woohoo, Steve!
Shout out! Steve makes all kinds of crazy fun. I don't know.
I may have actually played a prototype of this.
You think you did?
Yeah, at Origins.
It looks like it's got tons of cool cardboard. It has, of course, rubber band guns.
Oh, wow.
So in the game, you are, I think you're either a goblin
goblin, or you're just trying to take out the goblins, I don't know, but it's got this cool 3D board that looks like a castle that's like half sunken into the miry muck, and people are trying to shoot each other's goblins and not their own goblins that they've placed all over the board. It looks like just a drunken blast, to be honest. That's what that's pretty much how Steve rolls, I think. It looks like fun. It looks like it would be a great party experience. I think I saw the date a second ago, and I don't remember what it was.
So we're talking dexterity-based game here?
I think so, yeah.
It is dexterity-based.
Okay. Yeah,
this game so. Actually...
January 17th.
So this game was actually with another company. I don't know if he had signed with it or had created a contract with him, and I guess that fell through. And so I'm glad that it's coming... It's picked up somewhere else. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, good luck on that campaign. I hope that's a lot of fun. Sarah?
A game I want to mention is Tiny Epic
Something.
We don't know.
We don't know yet.
Yes, it'll be launching on Kickstarter January 18th. And so far, they are not revealing what the theme is going to be to this one. We just have a photo from their Facebook post.
Yeah, and it's the 8th today, so when you hear this, more may have been revealed. Yeah. But
yes. True, you may have more information.
There are puzzle pieces being taken off.
Kind of cool, like marketing, like way of like getting people interested in what this may be.
Yeah. The Tiny Epic world. Obviously, they've produced several different games. And they've got like westerns and galaxies and like medieval different ones.
I think it has to be a mystery thing. That's my bet.
Okay, let's go around.
Okay, so we're looking at the puzzle piece artwork right now.
can see part of a face.
It's a woman.
A woman who's blonde.
With a tattoo.
She's got a tattoo.
There's a lot of green in the background.
The tattoo is the Gamelin logo. Yes. So there's not a whole lot of secret information on that one. All right. I think, are you ready for my theory on what the game's going to be? I think it's like Frozen episode 2, where Elsa goes really dark and has like frozen the whole world. That's what this illustration looks like.
Sarah? No.
He's crazy.
I think it could be pirate themed, and this is a mermaid.
Ooh. I was going to go seafarer pirate, so.
Let's see, tattoo. I mean, it could be like biker chick.
Tiny epic bikers.
Yeah, I was definitely getting a sort of sea feel to it.
Man, like, how do you all get that?
Atlantis.
It's got the green, blue
background. It's because of the colors.
It's the colors.
I think it's a tiny epic mystery.
Tiny epic
That's my
guess. Ryan, you're going with what?
Atlantis Defenders.
Tiny epic Atlantis.
Okay. I just want to say that of all those games, Tiny Epic Frozen is what I want to play.
So. No. Melissa, what was your guess?
I said biker.
Biker? Oh, okay.
I mean, I don't really think it was that, but I wanted to pick something different than all of the sea things.
Yeah.
Any other Kickstarters? Did we wrap them up?
Well, yes.
What?
I want to talk about one more, but it has to do with a little story.
Okay. Tell us your story, Kevin.
We've gotten a few people that have contacted us about how they're really enjoying listening to the podcast.
Yeah,
and
some of those.
So James, shout out to you, man. Thanks for listening. And another guy, Adam, who recently contacted us, who is originally from Pennsylvania. He heard that Melissa and I were up in Pennsylvania, so he contacted us and was talking about how he's enjoying listening and told us about a friend of his that has a game currently on Kickstarter. This is called Snowfall Recall.
Cool.
So it has a little, like, the dice is kind of cool. It's got little snowflakes on it. And so Eric, the designer of Snowfall Recall, emailed us. And so, yeah, if you want to check out their game, Snowfall Recall, on Kickstarter right now. So by the time this airs, there still should have a couple weeks left, but you can check that out. It's being hand-done, so...
Handcrafted.
Handcrafted. There you go. Thank you, Melissa. Cool. Handcrafted.
I have to admit that one of the things that I didn't see coming as a result of starting this podcast was the feedback that we would get from people. Like, when we post videos, people will comment, on the YouTube video or on Facebook or whatever, and usually the comments are very specifically related to the game. So it's like, yeah, I hate this game as well, or yeah, I love this game. But I think it's because we've had the opportunity to just talk a little bit more and be, who we are normally on the podcast. We've gotten a lot of really cool emails from people who are just listening and enjoying it and who are, connecting over what state we're from or our skydiving hobbies or whatever it is, future hobbies,
maybe a postcard someday.
Yeah, send us that postcard.
I'm waiting. I want one. Somebody please send us a postcard.
She asks every week, do we get a postcard yet? So that's been really fun. That's been really encouraging and has been just a delight to be able to connect with more people. And I think I'm really actually looking forward more to this year of con season than I have in the past.
I was going to say that.
Because I feel like we're going to run into people who are going to be like, oh, I listened to you and I know your story.
They're not going to recognize our faces, though.
Yeah. We're on video, too.
So. Okay, well, there is that.
They might not, though.
We'll I've have Tantrum House t-shirts
They'll recognize our voices. They'll hear Kevin talking somewhere, and they'll be like, oh,
that guy in the
Kevin.
Hat. He sounds like
I don't know what he looks like, but somewhere over there, that's Kevin.
We'll have Tantrum House t-shirts on.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So that'll they can help. Just look for our Tantrum House.
Just yell out a name randomly. Kevin! So you can turn around.
Holographic, like, bat signals that we can,
project onto the ceiling. I thought we could do that.
Our kids have toys that do this, guys.
I know.
We just have to change out the little plastic filter. Okay.
Laser. Look for the Tantrum House bat signal. We're going to have to add another stretch goal. That's what just happened right there.
The bat signal.
So next week, we'll announce our winner.
Yes.
For the signed copy of Steam Court.
Well, actually, we'll probably be announcing it like as this goes live, right? On Facebook?
Yeah.
So we can't do it now because there's still a remaining week before this posts.
Yeah.
But when it does post, we'll also post it with the winner of our Steam Court contest.
Yep.
Thank you guys for retweeting that. We've got a bunch of great retweets. And, what do you call it? Not likes, but is it likes? Yeah.
Just likes. On, loves,
the,
loves
on
likes.
The Instagrams. I don't know. I can't do the... No,
on
that's
the
not even Instagram.
On the Twitterverse.
And it's getting late, so I think it's about time that we wrap up the show. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Be sure to check out tantrumcon.com for information on our upcoming game day, February 24th.
Mm-hmm.
And then keep an eye out because we'll be launching our Season 5 Kickstarter in the next couple of weeks
February 5th.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. Hope you had a good time. We did for sure.
Woo-hoo.
And we'll catch you next time. Bye!
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard. Thank you!